Sunday! Every Sunday, side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Ray Guarino and Jody calls them as they seize them, and you better believe them. Here, relevant news, biased opinion, and outright nonsense regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! It's mechanical trickery never before broadcast over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrill to the explosive tension as Ray and Jill cuss each other down track, barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disasters as they shake hands with the devil. All that and so much more at high noon this Sunday on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and the Live Eat, Ray Guarino and Joe D. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free every Sunday at noon on WHBC. Take the Hempstead Turnpike to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway sign. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass.
All right, teens, beauty queens, and guys in blue jeans, you have tuned into another rousing hour of Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show with your host, Ray Guarino, and co-host Chris Switzer. How you doing, Chris?
Doing well. I'm very roused right now.
And your blue jeans are explicitly...
Come on. That's why I'm roused, because the blue jeans are over there hanging on the chair there.
Oh, a little too tight. That's the problem.
The only show where we can get away with not wearing pants, it's Motormouth Radio.
Absolutely. And I tell you what we're going to do. We are going to have a great show this week, as usual.
Although just the fact that we're talking to each other is a great show right now. Yeah.
Although last week wasn't so great because we crashed and burned, but we did have audio to put up on the website, and you should check that out at motormouthradio.com. Also, go to the other social media outlets on Twitter and Facebook, or Faccia Bruta, as we call it, it's Motormouth Radio.
And yes, you should definitely check out that show, because it appeared that we were like not on the air. So there may be some hidden messages that you may find in that show.
Right.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Yes. What other technical social gadgets that we're available on, Ray?
Well, the only other one that's out there that we still use, because MySpace kicked us off last week, is...
MySpace.
I know that because I have kids, is... Joe's favorite, which is Instagram. And on Instagram, it's real underscore Motormouth Radio. And that's where you'll see pictures that we post of things that we get involved in and things. I have some pictures of the GTO project up there, because it finally went through the paint booth.
Oh, my gosh. You got to be kidding me. Really?
Wow.
Dude, you're officially freaking out right now, I'm sure.
Oh, that's so true. Because... they're going to start to do the cut and buff and polishing tomorrow on the car.
But what about the car?
I don't know. They may not play with that at all. But they're
cut and buff you.
Do all the polishing, and then I have that great joy of putting parts back onto a fresh paint job. So I'm not looking forward to this.
No, because that's the joy and the pain of doing what we do, is the fact that you're making something look beautiful, yet you're going to use it, and that beauty may be compromised when you go and use it. Hence the first scratch and the first tantrum.
I'll tell you something. I've had this prophecy, and I've told you this, and I told my wife this a number of times, and I've told it to everybody. I said, I know that this car will get scratched or damaged in my own garage. It's inevitable, because every car or motorcycle I've had in there that was either new or painted did get scratched or damaged by something in the garage. And let me tell you something. It's freaky. It's happening. The car isn't in the garage right now. Okay. Right. It's pretty much vacant. I mean, I have a drum set in there, a motorcycle, and all the other junk. But I was in the den yesterday watching some TV. And, you know, from my den, I could see the garage. It's close. It's outside, obviously.
Yeah.
And the door, I had the garage door open, and I heard something go, I heard some noises outside, and I heard something go thump, and I'm like, that sounds like it was in the garage. What the heck was that?
Right.
So later on, hours later, after I forgot about it, I went in there, and I have a pair of valve covers for my Impala, chrome valve covers that are in a box that have been on the shelf, and they've been up there since probably 1997.
Oh my gosh.
I haven't moved them. I found the box on the floor, right about where the back of the car would have been. I swear to God, if the car was there, they would have bounced off the quarter panel. And I said, you know, it wasn't like something I recently took off and put back and it wasn't solid or something that I, you know, I moved. I cannot explain to you, like I can't explain what happened to the audio last week. I can't explain to you how that happened.
You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here, Ray Ray, and I'm going to tell you, this is what you have to do. You have to exorcise the garage. Yeah. You have to go in there with like some sage or something, burning sage, go around the garage and tell the spirits, get lost.
It's interesting. My wife had a better thought than that.
Wow.
She said, what you need to do is just back a dumpster into the driveway and throw all that crap into it, and then there won't be anything to fall. I said, nah, a 2x4 will fall, like the roof will collapse. But she's right.
Exactly. Leave it to good old common sense. Your wife has an abundance of it. So.
Right.
She's right. I kick her. But I mean, this is something that I've always been talking to you about. When you own these things, you now have to care for them. It is now your responsibility to take care of these things. Therefore, it is your responsibility to make sure these things don't get hurt, or the things that you really do care about don't get hurt by the things you really don't care about, or the things you're storing.
Yeah.
So sell them. Get rid of it. The second that falls off, you look at it and go, this is a sign. Here's your sign. And you say, all right, you're the first thing on the list to get sold. Yeah. Get it out of the garage.
Yeah.
That's all. That's all. Just get rid of it. I mean, this is what I'm trying to do now. I have sold, I think we've talked about this in past shows, I have sold a lot of the Caddy Seville stuff. Why do I need Cadillac Seville stuff? I don't. I will never buy another one of those cars ever again. Not that they're bad cars. It's I've had my fill of them.
Right.
Bye-bye. Sell all the stuff. And you know what? It's all stuff that I've had to take care of, and I've had to move from one side of the garage to the other side of the garage, back to the first side of the garage, up on the top shelf, back on the bottom shelf. You know what? Tired of moving it. Get rid of it. Out the door.
Let me throw this out to you. My prime physician is in the market. He's been looking for a car, like for a Seville, for a number of years now. And you know, he might go with a full-size Caddy, but he definitely wants that disco-era Caddy.
Wow.
And he did look at a couple. I actually sent him a few links. He saw a few, but he, you know, none of them were trigger pulling worthy. So,
well, they're tough cars. They don't age well, and I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm just saying it not in a design way, I should say, in a structural way. They're prone to rust,
much like their owners.
Yeah, but their owners don't age well either,
in a structural way.
That's for sure. That polyester, boy, can eat right into your skin. Oof. And those Kiana shirts way down.
Right.
Yeah. You get all that just, you know, makes the chest hair just grow and grow.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're cars you really have to take care of from day one. You can't let them sit for very long. And the problem with them is like the problem I'm having with the Green Ghost, is that the parts are just becoming so impossible to find.
What type of parts specifically are hard for that car?
A lot of fuel injection parts, I've noticed. A lot of, I had to, and most of them were sitting in my garage, I'll tell you the truth. I think I cornered the market on Seville parts because of my dad, because he would just buy stuff and say, ooh, got to put this aside because we may need this one day. There were two little sensors that sat on either side of the intake manifold. They were small. They were like the size of a pencil, like a pencil eraser. And they both monitored basically the emissions and the fuel air intake. Those things I replaced on mine because my Seville was prone to stalling. And those were literally impossible to find. It was the only time I've ever purchased a car part from a guy's porch.
Wow.
Literally, I went to an auto parts store, and the guy in the auto parts store said, look, I don't have it, but I do know who does, and he's not involved in the business. He's a private seller. I'll call him. And that's how I ended up picking those up. I can't remember what they were called, but there was those things. And there was another, you got me on a tear here, Ray. Glad you asked this question. There was another thing. It sat in the throttle body itself, in the fuel injection throttle body. And it fit in to, it fit like into like a clip. And you had to push it down and slide it in at the same time. And it's like some sort of air metering valve. And I swear, we had to purchase two of them. And I remember this 20 years ago, 30 years ago. My dad had to purchase two of them because the first one you were going to buy, you were going to break it.
Wow.
You were going to break it. The second one was the one that went in well. And this happened every single time. And he cracked me up because one day he said, I'm pretty good at this. I'll just buy one. And he did buy the one. And he went to go put it in, and what do you think happened? He broke it. So he had to go back to the dealership, and there's the parts guy standing there with his arms folded going, hey, you broke it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, give me another one. So now this is what you have to put up with and have to endure with a car like this. Now, mind you, we're talking about a Caddy where every single 70s Cadillac interior driver's armrest is cracked.
Yeah.
After like 5,000 or 6,000 miles of driving a vehicle, you're going to crack the armrest. It's every single door pull, every interior driver's door pull. And you know this better than anybody, right? After a while, that thing is going to come popping out. Well, guess what? They're all broken.
Yeah, that one, I think, you know, it's a metal band that has like a leatherette or vinyl strap.
Yes,
over it.
Yes.
And I think sometimes the metal substrate would separate or crack. Oh, yeah. Break from the mounting point. Yeah.
And then later in the 70s, the Cadillac decided to redesign it where it was a complete frame and it had sort of like a very thick handle that was spring loaded. It was very well done, very well put together until that separated from the door on my Seville.
Yeah.
Literally, I had the whole framework in my hand.
Should have bought a Coupe de Ville.
So it's like things like that. If you really have to be tolerant in order to own a vehicle like that, just like you have to be tolerant to own a C-body Chrysler, but I'm not going there. This is only an hour show.
I would venture to say that pretty much most of the GM line in those years shared those problems. It's not that it was just Caddy, you know. So
what makes it that much more difficult was the fact that it was a Seville and not a coupe or a sedan or a Fleetwood or even an Eldorado, which a lot of those, not as much the Eldorado, but a lot of the main Caddies were all shared a lot of stuff, but Seville and Eldorado really didn't. So you always had to put up with that uniqueness. So.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have a guest with us today, Mr. Steve Linden, who was sat in with us last week and did the audio, is going to be back with us again today, and he is here. So we're going to open the door and let Steve Linden in, and we will continue where we left off last week. So
yeah, can I do the intro, the Steve Linden intro?
Yes, you can.
Since we're going to let Steve in, this is going to take a while.
Yeah.
So Steve Linden, author, investor, writer, wrench turner, paint buffer, an all-around fountain of knowledge and good guy, Steve Linden.
That's a great
investor,
intro.
Author, investor, and all kinds of good stuff. Here he is, coming to you live from the technological bowels of Motormouth Radio.
Very good.
And where is he?
I don't know. He must be stuck in the vestibule.
He's in the green room.
He's out there somewhere, so hopefully he'll be in a second.
I tried to get it.
I know. It's like trying to talk up car wash, you know. You keep running out of things, and like you're like, oh, I got to go another 10, 15 seconds. Oh, no. Well, it's sunny outside, and the water's wet.
You got to explain what happened that day that I had you do your first radio talk up and I picked that song.
We were asked to fill in for Rob with his free for all show, and it's a 2-hour show where you play just nothing but music. So I brought in tons of music, all the CDs, all the stuff I always wanted to hear. And, we not being a radio jock or a DJ, I never learned the art of a talk up, although I've watched guys like you and Mike Sims and, you know, some of the greats in the world do it. And we were just kind of doing this lame-o thing. And then I said, you know what, we're going to do here's one of my favorites, Rolls Royce car wash. And you said, hey, Ray, why don't you talk that up? So you threw me on the spot live, and I figured, all right, well, what better time to make a fool of yourself than when you throw on the spot live? And I said, okay, I earnestly said, let me try this, you know, right, jump it off the cliff. And as I started talking, it didn't take too long to realize, oh my word, this isn't a radio edit. I don't know how long this intro is for this song, but it goes on forever.
And what you wanted to do was you wanted to hit the post, which means that you wanted to stop talking when they started singing.
The other way of hitting a post is when there's maybe a music break. There's right, a couple of ways you can do it. I couldn't do any of it. It was like I was out of breath. I was hyperventilating. My sweat was pouring down. I lost 12 pounds. So anyway,
you were good. We have tape of it somewhere. We got to find that. Yes. We got to find that tape. And I think Steve has unmuted himself.
Steve, are you with us?
I am with you.
Hey!
Thanks for coming back to endure more of this.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You sound good.
How do I look?
You look great.
Thank you. How are you guys doing?
You kind of look like your wife a little bit if we go by just descriptions, but that's okay.
We're good. It's been a wacky week, but we're glad. Thank you for coming back and joining us once again in a technologically better environment than we had last week. Last week was just a complete disaster technologically. So
yeah.
So we're going to make it up this week.
And we should say that you, if you're listening, you want to get in on this, you can call and talk to Steve at our temporary number, which is 516-256-9510.
Write it down.
Yeah. Steve, there was something I wanted to talk to you about from last week. I have notes all over the place. But, you know, first let me throw something out there for both of you guys, because I think this is going to be kind of interesting. I had this realization about a week or so ago. Have you ever noticed? I mean, we all have families and there's kids and other things and, you know, women, wives, daughters, sons, the whole nine yards. And there's always like certain dishes, like, you know, like I've noticed like after breakfast, no one wants to wash like the skillet that the eggs or the, you know, the greasy stuff was in. And no one wants to wash like the, you know, if you fried a steak,
just throw it out.
Yeah, I know. But I've come to the realization that I don't mind doing that stuff. And I do it all the time. I did it this morning. And I think it's because being a car guy, having my hands in so much dirt and muck and grease and grime all the time. And, you know, cleaning dog and cat waste, you know, you got to do that too. It just doesn't faze me to clean a greasy pot or pan.
Can I ask how the dog and cat waste have anything to do with automotive? Interest.
It's just that our dog is very old and now he's getting a little incontinent, so he just kind of drops all over the floor. So you're picking up whatever he drops, you got to pick up. And
just like a car would. Yeah.
Just like an old car, right.
Steve, do you want to take a phone call? We got a phone call. Do you want to take one?
Sure, of course.
Let's see if we can do this.
Okay.
And go, hi, you're on with the Motormouths and author and writer and extraordinaire Steve Linden.
How are you doing? This is the world famous, often imitated, never duplicated Michael from LT.
Hey,
what's Mikey,
up?
How are you?
What's up, Mikey? How you been, brother?
Good. I just wanted to, you know, I'm in between working on a boat here, but you guys mentioned you put your car back together. I want to recommend a product that is a real big advantage when you're putting anything back together. It's called Tef Gel. Okay? And this stuff is better than it's a great lubricant because it's anti-corrosion for the wiring. You put this on bolts, you'll never have a problem getting them off. You'll never see corrosion with the similar metals like you would see like with a die-cast door handle and a tin door.
Okay.
You know, so you won't get it'll go a long way towards preventing all that bubbling of paint around the chrome and all that later on in the years.
And it's called
great stuff, and I've been using it on bolts for years.
And what was the name again, Mike?
TEF gel.
TEF.
You know, there's some real nice people from down in Virginia. Yeah.
I guess you get that at a marina, a marine supply?
No, you got to order it online. You don't see it in my place. Or you can Google it. You might find some place, but I bought it direct.
Okay.
And this stuff lasts forever.
Cool.
That's awesome. Very cool, Mike. Thank you so much.
You guys are in good health.
Yeah, same here. Yes. Please be safe. We'll talk real soon. Thanks, Mikey.
Buddy. Bye.
All right.
Be safe. Bye-bye. Good to know.
Good to know. Okay, good to know. Yeah, because I'm fretting over that as we leave.
Yes, very true. So you,
what's that, Steve?
Back to pots and pans.
Yeah. I really, you know, like I said, I've noticed in the kitchen, like, you know, things will get washed, but certain things just kind of stay there and like waiting for the next guy. And until you have to do it. And I realized, like, yeah, I don't care. You know, what's, you know, it's cleaner than anything I do outside garage, right? Or in the shop.
Yeah.
Yes. But do you take the handles apart like I do?
Oh, no.
I swear, I get a screwdriver, take the handles off, clean around the pot because you always get that crud around the edge of the handle, and then put the handles back on again.
I have done that. When it builds up, I say, you know what, you get in there and my wife, she was in a pot that had two handles on it, and I went to grab, and she boils chicken for the dog, and well, I, you know, I love the smell of boiled chicken. Oh my god! But anyway, that's another story.
You think you know a guy?
I know. And I grabbed one of the handles, and it was moving, and I'm like, what the hell? It's like, and so I grabbed this Phillips head screwdriver. And my wife said, she was, what are you doing? I said, I'm fixing this problem here. I said, the handles are ready to fall off and you get it, you know, God forbid it's filled with boiling water. She goes, oh, that could be tightened. I'm like, yeah. And if I go real far, I'm going to take the screw out and put a dab of Loctite on it. How's that?
Wow. Building this pot.
Oh. It's, you know what, Steve? It's all basically PM, just like we do with our cars and with everything else. You know, the kitchen appliances and sundries need a little bit of attention.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Very, very true. Yeah. So what were you going to ask Steve Ray about? What were we discussing off air?
Okay. There was a topic in the May 29th of the in Newsday Cars. It was Steve's Classic Car Doctor column.
You're going to hold Steve's feet to the fire again, right?
Well, he'll remember this because we talked about it. One of his readers, Mark from Stony Creek, posted the question, what or does it go with the car? And the question was, what things should go with a car when it's sold?
Ooh.
And, you know, it came up things like trophies, manuals, sales literature, spare parts. Should things be expected? So, Steve, if you want to expand upon that, please do, because I thought this was a great topic.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was a great question because it's there is no answer, and it makes you think. And I like the things that make you think.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what are you doing here?
I'm on break.
Okay, good. So are we.
But, it really did make me think. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that there, for some things, at least in my mind, there are clear-cut answers. And for some things, there aren't. So, you know, if you've owned a car and maybe it won some trophies along the way, that's kind of a gray area. You know, maybe you consider the trophies part of your life. Maybe you consider them to be part of the car's history. I tend to think it's the latter, that it's part of the car's history. But what happens if you inherited a car from your parents, you know, and your parents won the trophy with that car, and now for whatever reason you're selling the car? Do you keep the trophies? Do they go with the car? You know, it's kind of really, there's a gray area, and it does make you think.
Oh, interesting. I would think that the trophies would, excuse me, I think they would go with the owner, because it was the owner who would probably push that rock along. They were the catalyst to acquiring the trophy. I don't think the car was. I think that I would probably go with the owner on that.
Let me give you a hypothetical situation. Mm-hmm. Let's say your Chrysler product that's sitting behind you, right?
Right.
Let's say that you had one. Let's say you had restored that car, and that car had won trophies. And let's say you chose to give those trophies to the next owner with the sale of the car. Now, let's say the next owner is selling the car. They did not earn those trophies. They did not do the work to get those trophies. And now they're selling the car. Do the trophies go with the car, or do they stay with the owner?
Yeah, I think at that point, they probably want them to go with the car because they know they didn't earn them themselves, I would think.
But I think the work relates to the owner and not the car. That's I think
work does. But think of this, Chris. And this came out in the article. If
that's a good point, though, by the way, Steve. Yes, I'm sorry, Ray.
As you restore a car, you know, you can take local awards and then maybe go to like, you know, a little bit bigger of a venue, and maybe you go to a Grand National Award or, you know, right. you know, a national title. That's actually provenance for the car that, hey, like, you know, the Corvette guys do that, the NRCS, this is NCRS. This is, it proves that that car has been judged among the best, and that, right. that trophy is, or that, or the certificate, whatever it is now looked at as high provenance. So
yeah,
no, and conversely, on the other side of Ray's exact same argument, take the same car, the same scenario, in order to earn a Bloomington Gold or an NCRS Top Flight or something like that, that's almost a lifestyle. So the owner has to give up, you know, months and months, if not years, of weekends.
That's
so
true.
That gets attributed to the owner, but the quality gets attributed to the car. So really, with it, there's no clear cut answer.
And conversely to that argument, if the owner was one of those guys who just had the money and had a shop build the car and he never touched it except to pay someone to trailer it to the show, it's really the shop that earned that award.
Right.
I think we can solve this problem just by, I think, Steve, you just really touched on it, and it's a topic that you and I, Steve, talk about all the time. The value of the vehicle. If the trophy enhances the value of the vehicle, then it should go with the car. How does that sound? Like a Bloomington Gold should go with the Corvette. A trophy that, if it doesn't enhance the vehicle, if it's like maybe a smaller or a local show or something like that where it won't affect the vehicle's value one way or another, then maybe it's a choice at that point. But I think if it enhances the value, like a Top Flight or along those lines, then maybe it should go. But if it doesn't, then it shouldn't.
Let me ask you a question then. And I'm just playing devil's advocate because I don't think there really is a correct answer. But I'm going to ask you a question. You're correct if you're looking at it strictly from a financial perspective. Now, I always advise people that are going to restore cars, most cars, there are always exceptions, I always advise them, don't do it. It's much cheaper to let someone else do it and then buy the car restored. There are a few exceptions, but
exactly.
It almost always makes sense. There's two reasons to restore a car in my mind. One is maybe you want a $50,000 car and you don't have $50,000, but you have $10,000 to buy a car and you have $1,000 a month to give to a restoration shop. You'll still be underwater, but eventually you'll end up with the car that you wanted. That's one reason. The other reason is for sentimental reasons. So let's take the argument that you just made, the trophy goes with the car. So let's say you restore a car because it was your father's car, your mother's car, whatever. They loved this car. They absolutely loved this car. And you restored it for them. They're gone for 10 years. You inherited the car. You finally have enough money. And this is a scenario that I actually encounter more often than you might think. And they restore the car for the second reason that I say is the only reason to restore a car, and that's for sentimental reasons, because now the financial incentive is taken out of the picture. You know you're going to be into it for more than it's worth, and you decide to go ahead anyway. So let's say the car is a Corvette, and you restore it, and it takes an NCRS Top Flight, and you did it for your parents, and years and years of work, whether you did it yourself or whether you paid a shop to do it, has now resulted in a trophy. You go to sell the car. Do you keep that trophy that you won because you restored this car in honor of your parents, or do you give the trophy away with the car because it enhances the value financially?
Wow.
And it's a rhetorical question. I don't think there's a right answer.
Yeah. Well, you know, my take on that is I think I would keep that. I would want to keep that trophy. But in that case, I think like with NCRS, there's got to be a secondary method to prove that the car won it. Like there's got to be a registry or a listing. Right. Or you could maybe get a certificate to show that this car was a winner, because once it is, you know, it's in the record book, so to speak. Right.
Like it absolutely is. So you're absolutely right. With the NCRS, there is. You don't necessarily have to have the physical trophy or certificate. That is all on the records. Mm-hmm. But I have conversations with these people about it all the time. You know, the buyer says, I'm not buying the car unless I get the trophies with it.
Wow.
Wow. I say, I'm not giving you the trophies. I've spent the last 30 years of my life. There's no answer. It's just one of those things that makes you think.
Right.
Wow, that is amazing. Yeah,
I tell you what, I've been thinking about this, and it's the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to take care of a little bit of business here, and then we're going to come back with Steve Linden, and we're going to talk more about this because this topic isn't done yet. I still have a few thoughts myself. So, hang with us, and we'll be back. You can call us again in the second half of the show at 516-256-9510, where we'll come back with Mr. Steve Linden. So Ray Guarino for Chris Switzer, our We'll be taking a break here on Motor Mouth Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Lynbrook and Oceanside. We remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose the shop where you have your car fixed. CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, including 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with rental car arrangements if needed. We're considered an essential business and are still open, providing touchless drop-off and pickup services. And yes, se habla español. More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or online at celebritychasecollision.com.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by the Summer of Remote Opportunities with continuing education at Nassau Community College. From the comfort of your couch, expand your home improvement knowledge, engage in book discussions, increase your test prep skills, and more. All classes will meet via Zoom audio video conferencing format. Visit ncc.edu/continuing education for the complete list of classes and registration form. Or for more information, email ced@ncc.edu.
Shake off the realities of the day, broaden your musical horizons, and embrace the diversity every Monday afternoon at 5 for 2 hours of Revelations. The show offers a potently unique collection of music with an emphasis on themes and rock rarities, an occasional tour de force of blues and soul mixed with compelling sets of folk and folk rock. I'm Steve Kaye, and I've got the perfect soundtrack for your drive home every Monday afternoon at 5. On Revelations, right here on the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
All right, we're back with Motor Mouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show geared to all of you locked in people. Like we said before, the teens, the queens, and the guys in the blue jeans with Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer, and we have Steve Linden on the line. Fellas, where did we leave off?
Pots and pans.
We started with pots and pans.
Pots and pans, trophies.
We left off with trophies.
Right.
Personally, on a personal level, you know, I always say save your cards and letters. And on a personal level, I never understood why you would want to keep a trophy if you don't have the car to go with it. Just don't get that. If you have a trophy, the trophy in my eyes, and as we were thinking about this over the break, in my eyes, I think the trophy should go with the car. Just because the fact that you may own another car that may garnish more trophies, and now you have trophies from your old car collecting dust, what are you going to do with those? You're going to put those in a box, and you're going to put those on the side, and it's just like my wife's old bowling trophies. It's just, we look at them and go, why are these here? Get rid of them.
But you know how there's two sides to every argument? Let me ask you a question. If you keep giving your trophies away with your car, how are you going to build up a shelf full of trophies?
Right.
Even if you get more trophies.
Right.
But now, really, who, when you have people over the house,
right,
and like, hey, come and take a look at my trophy collection, who is going to be the guy that's going to go, yeah,
isn't that the first thing you do when people come over?
Yeah.
Hey, want to see my trophy collection? Want to see my trophies?
You know, I know some guys who have done that. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I think it's, to me, it's just, I don't know why. I'm wrapping a thought around it and laughing.
It's, yeah, just, as you should.
I mean, you know, this is coming from an individual that will probably never in his automotive life ever get a trophy. I'm like you, Ray. Whenever the judges have walked over to my cars that were in car shows in the past, I've said, don't bother, really. Don't waste your time. You know, go to other cars that are much better.
I want to tell you about the one time, one of the times I did get a trophy, totally didn't expect it. I was riding my Super Glide, which was a mild custom. You want to go back to the old classifications that we used to use back in the day. And it was very sanitary. It was clean. It was screwed together right. And I was riding with my buddy Tony, who eventually got me into BMWs. And we were out on the North Shore. I think we were in Huntington somewhere. And there was a BMW show. It was like cars and motorcycles. And it was predominantly other BMW clubs. It was predominantly BMW vehicles. And he says, come on, let's go in. And I'm like, ah. And you know, I think we were there a little late. They let us go into like, kind of like the show field. And okay, we'll park here. And we went and got something to eat and came back. And I had like a note that I won an award. I'm like, I won an award. I didn't enter the damn thing. And they gave me a trophy for like best custom. I'm like, wow. I said, that's the best trophy to get. I didn't clean it. I didn't do anything. And I didn't expect it. And, you know, and in a field of other bikes that were certainly gorgeous, I was like, I was probably the only real custom bike there is what it was. I guess.
Wow. Yes, but when you sold the bike, did you sell the, did the award go with the bike? Did you keep the award?
No, I don't know what happened to that damn thing. I don't know.
It's in a box with the rest. What was
sure
that?
You sure you don't.
Yeah, because it's in a box with the rest of his bowling trophies.
No, I could actually see around me now. I can see some of the awards I had gotten over the years for my Impala and stuff from for other cars. And that one, I don't, I have to look, you know. Actually, my wife got rid of some of them without me knowing a while ago, so that might have been one of them. I don't know.
She's a smart woman.
Yeah, it was just a local show, so it wasn't anything that would be like, you know, crazy.
She is a smart woman. Steve, did you ever notice that there are some vehicles that attract a certain group of people? Do you ever notice that?
Generally speaking, more specifically, what are you referring to?
Well, like when I had the TR6, I noticed that there's a group of individuals. They're usually collegiate. They're usually educators. They're usually guys with jackets and with the patches on them, like the herringbone sport coats with, you know, pipe smokers. Usually that's the type of TR6 owner. That's not the case with the 300. not the collegiate bunch.
Big fat guys and wife beaters with a Budweiser and a beer. That's your Uncle Mo, I know.
Well, without even applying what the demographic is that would go to each one of those two types of cars, can you think of two more different types of cars than a TR6 and the big Chrysler?
Exactly.
I mean, you know, one is a little car, it's British, it's efficient. It's, the other one is a massive symbol of American, you know, opulence.
Opulence.
They're as opposite as could possibly be.
It's the truth. And it's the clientele has is opposite as well, and I find it's extraordinary to me, and it was always something that I've always, these are like the questions that I always like to bring up to you, because I really feel like you appreciate it, and you're a person that would understand and elaborate on something like that. So
well, you see at the shows also, you know, when you go to some of these shows that attract, you know, more American cars, you know, like for example, there's one at Suffolk Community College that takes place a couple of times a year during the summer. It's mostly American cars. There's a few European cars mixed in, and there's one demographic of people walking around. Then we can go to the European Sports Car Show up at the church in Stony Brook during the summer. There's no crossover. It's a whole other completely different group of people. And then you get the shows, which are the ones I enjoy, where there really is a lot of, you know, both, and they're fun. But yes, you can tell from the car. You can often predict from the cars the type of people that are driving them. That would actually be interesting to do. You know, to actually go to a show one day with a mixed group of cars, with a pen and a piece of paper, make a list of the cars, and write down what type of person you think is going to get into each car, and then see if they do.
Right.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
That would be interesting.
No, it is very true. There was a time I was at English Town with the TR6, and I wanted to show it. It was during the swap meet and auto shows, and they had, I think it was, unfortunately, it was on the Saturday. It wasn't the day that they showed the original cars, because the TR6 at the time was certainly, it was not customized. I tried to keep it as original as I could. But unfortunately, I was there on a Saturday when they had all the custom cars. So I asked, I said, do you mind if I bring this in? And they're like, yeah, sure. But we didn't know where to categorize it. So they put me in import custom. The only place I can pretty much park this car. And I'm sitting next to Mitsubishi Starion and the Eclipses with the gull wing doors, and the Hondas with the sound systems and the neon lights and the TR6.
Right.
Well, you can always tell them that you thought that they meant that it had to go through U.S. Customs to be imported.
Yeah.
I told him it was a Subaru Impreza that I just customized really bad. All these, but it was so funny to watch all these kids that really never saw, you could tell they never saw this car before. And they're like looking at it like it was almost like a Stanley Kubrick 2010 movie. They're like walking up to the monolith with their finger that they want to touch it and go, is it really metal? Like, what is that? I just found it extraordinary. And ever since then, I've always said there's a certain amount of people that gravitate to certain cars. And it's almost, I hate to use the term stereotypical because it really isn't, but it's just you find patterns that are just extraordinary. And that's one of them that I've noticed with the Chrysler. It's a lot of Harley guys love the car.
Yeah, right. Yep.
A lot of guys.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that live in places that have open fields and huge fences and a lot of mountains. That's,
well, you
that's
could use it as a tractor if you had to.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Speaking of huge cars, Chris, Steve, I told Chris down at the shop, they brought in another job. It's a 57 Chrysler Imperial.
Mm.
Beautiful. Four-door, and it's got that two-piece sectioned roof. It's a now, the owner had sent the car out and had... You wouldn't know by looking at it, but the whole underside of the car, the chassis is powder coated. It's all been painted body color underneath.
Wow.
And then it just lagged. There's no interior, and the guy got jerked around. So it came down to the shop to be done correctly. And
do you want to take a call? I think there's a very special person calling. Very special person.
Okay. So
let's say, hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hi.
Hey, I'm Joey.
I'm on isolation. Hey. What's going on?
How are you?
Yes.
What's up, my brother?
I'm pretty good.
It's Uncle Ivoon.
Daily constitutional.
What was that?
And how you guys doing?
We're doing.
I just saw the sun, the large burning orb of the sky.
Yeah.
So that's what. that's why I was surprised. I think I just got a little lighter gray when my hair turned when I was exposed to the sun. Let's go.
That's good.
See, I've gotten that. Yeah, I've gotten that Florida farmer tan. You know what I mean? My sleeves got lighter and my arms got darker.
Right, right.
Ain't that cute?
Yeah,
you
we're
sound
all going
good.
We're all going through that now. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. You know, and speaking of that, Joe, I've been in touch with the guys at the UD, keeping in touch with Dougie and Johnny and all. And they've been everybody's jonesing to do something. You know.
Yeah, they just wanted to see where I was hiding.
Right.
You know, I want to go over there and socially distant, responsible contact. I want to see what's going on out there. Let's see what's happening. And then, with the chemical that are loose out there, I'm sure those germs don't stand a chance.
No.
But they,
the things floating around the UD will kill anything.
Sure.
Yes, if we could survive, that stuff can't either.
Right.
You know, we're in a germ-free environment.
Exactly.
You know, let's see if we can gas them chemically washing down or any of that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to go visit those guys. Dougie and Johnny, if I miss you guys, if you're out there.
Right.
So let's see.
I'm sure they're looking forward to seeing you too, my brother.
A little bit.
Yeah, like I said, you give me the go ahead, and I'll be ready to pick you up in a half a however long it takes me to get there, half a heartbeat, and I'll go. I'll be right with you.
I'm sure.
Yes.
I'm sure I'll be. But I want to get out there amongst the world. You know, except if I wear the mask, I might get a little bit of oxygen deprivation. You know.
I know.
But I have to stick my head out the window like a dog with forced air induction.
Get a suit full.
No problem. You know? I got the Fiat out of storage. I'll bring the convertible. We'll do it in open air comfort.
Sounds good.
Joe, it's good hearing from you, my brother.
Yeah. All right. So let's face it, that thing's just like a B-52's video.
That's right.
And, exactly.
Very
all
good.
Right. We'll
speak to you real soon.
All right, Joe. We'll talk to you again
Thanks
soon,
a lot, man.
All right.
Be safe.
Released. Okay, man. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All righty.
Wow, hearing from Joe D.
That goes in the Motormouth Radio Memorable Moments folder.
Yes, exactly. It's always good to hear from the other co-host of this program.
That's right.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it's good to hear from. Steve, we haven't heard from him in a while, so it's nice to hear his voice.
So what is the UD?
That's the undisclosed location. And why it isn't the UL, I don't know. But I guess UD is the way it was introduced to me. I guess undisclosed.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. It's actually a facility in Queens that where a lot of guys have cars that they can rent spaces and keep them in there. That's where Johnny and Dougie and Joe has a car over there.
His car
was there. And it's as much of a social gathering place for the people in the club as anything else. And, it's a very social kind of a place for guys in that area. And, we've hung out there quite a lot. And like I said, a lot of good people over there, you want to talk about it's like an indoor car show. You walk through there, you'll see a little bit of everything from brass era up to modern day and with a heavy dosing of muscle car in between.
Wow.
Yeah. It's definitely a unique place. That's for sure.
They just keep
that's actually interesting because one of the things I've noticed is that here in this country, people who have cars, collector cars, really like to show them off. But it's interesting because when you go to other parts of the world, I guess they don't want to really display their wealth maybe, but you go to other parts of the world and the only way you get to see these collections is to be invited into them. They're in underground, just like they're in underground garages, things like
really?
That.
Wow.
Groups of people come and, hang out. Sounds like the same type of thing.
Wow. I don't know. I think here, the thing is, in Queens, you obviously, street parking is the norm, but if you're lucky enough to have a garage, a lot of those Queens garages aren't the best or optimum for car storage. So this being indoor storage, it's actually heated. It's not air conditioned, but it's kind of temperature controlled. It's very, very dry. So it's nice to keep things, safe and sound.
Yeah.
So they just kind of keep it low key because they don't want anybody. Well, actually, you couldn't walk in if you wanted to. There used to be three different key lock mechanisms you had to go through. Now it's been lessened, but you still couldn't just walk in. You'd have to
Someone will approach you.
Yeah, right.
Well, you'll be approached.
Exactly. Wow.
But it's like, it's funny. It's just like being up here in suburban Connecticut. Every single garage has got a project or something already done. And it is just amazing what you see when those garage doors are open.
It's incredible to me. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, usually like with the fact that we're doing a lot of walking around, my wife and I go past by this one yellow house. That's just, you would never know it from the way it looks. There's no outside cues, but when you roll the garage door open, there's a 57 black Chevy Bel Air sitting there.
Wow.
And you're like, where did that come from?
What's the address again?
Yeah, exactly. I haven't seen it move. It looks like the car is well wiped down. It looks like it's well cared for.
Yeah.
But I'm just laughing because we walk by this house all the time. And usually you can see like signs of a car guy. You always know. One always knows. Like, you walk by the Guarino house, you could tell from the Long Island Expressway that there's a car guy living there.
Which is pretty good because I'm on the South Shore.
That's how well you can
tell. Wow. That is good.
Yeah, let me tell you something. Now not only do other people know, but the neighbors, my garbage men know because I was cleaning out the shed a couple of years ago and I took out a spare four-cylinder Fiat engine, short block, and I had it sitting on its crankshaft, up next to the front steps. And, it was there long enough that I forgot about it. My wife said, "Hey, when are you going to finally move that thing?" "What thing?" "Oh, that, yeah." I said, "I got to get the truck from the shop." And then I'm talking to one of the guys at the shop who's a friend, and he's a sanitation guy in another town. He says, "Put it out. Your garbage man will probably take it." I said, back when I was a kid, my garbage man was a friend of mine, and I would put out V8s and rear ends. They would take anything.
Wow.
So I said, "You know what? Yeah, we tip these guys. Let me see what happens." I rolled it out to the curb. It was like a barrel where you had to pick it up and kind of move it a little at a time in a rolling motion. And I said, "Let's see what happens." So I know the recycling guys didn't take it. The trash guys didn't take it. But I waited until I left it there until Friday. And sure enough, after the regular garbage guys had left, that engine was gone. They took it. I'm like, wow. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. You cannot do that here, my son. That did not happen here. They will walk around that thing like, no.
Really?
The cops will come along and probably ticket it.
Well, I've had the garbage guys. I've actually had them. And even my mailman, you know, he saw the Fiat in the front of the house the other day. He's like, hey, you're working on this thing again now. Hey, it's good to see the cars back. I'm like, yeah, yeah. Or when nothing's going on, he says, hey, what's going on? You haven't been doing anything. You haven't been. I'm like, no, I've been over at the shop or I've been doing other things. He's like, eh. They know what's going on because they do watch.
Oh, yeah. That's amazing. Yeah.
Steve, are there any automotive queues around your house, or do you keep it kind of on a low key?
You know, I keep it. It's not that I do keep it on a low key, but quite honestly, really not on purpose. So, you know, my Cougar is parked out in front of the house if I happen to be using it like I am now, or if I'm working on it, the garage door is open. So, you know, my neighbors and our sanitation workers and my mailman, they all know, you know, they stop, they talk about cars all the time. I'll even get neighbors stopping by because I really don't try to keep it, you know, on the QT. I just, right. I don't, there's just nothing that says, hey, there's a car and a motorcycle in this barn, you know?
Right.
So, you know, most people know what's going on and a lot of them will just stop off. Even sometimes I'll get people to stop off who don't even know me and go, hey, I saw you working on whatever it was, you know, and so forth and so on. So, but yeah, it is interesting though.
I am trying to get to that point where I can close the garage door and you stand back and it doesn't look like a car guy lives here. It's a goal. It is a goal. I'm trying to do that.
But you know what? I think that's just my personality. It's not necessarily that I don't want people to know what's going on here because I really don't care. I don't have anything here that's worth anybody breaking in and stealing, to be quite honest.
Right.
I'm just so totally, completely ridiculous when it comes to neat and organized that there's just no reason for anyone to know that I'm a car guy because I just, you know how some people clean up when they're done with a project?
Yeah.
I clean up when I'm in the middle of the project and it gets too messy and then I start all over again.
I've done that.
I do. I really do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I put all my tools away. I say, this is getting out of hand. And I start all over. That's the way I am. I'm just crazy.
Yeah.
I am not that way at all.
Oh, I am. Yeah. I will do that.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I will take over both sides of the garage with one project.
That happens sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. I will do that. Doesn't matter what it is. If I have to open a door, forget it. Cars are moving out. Let's go. putting the big one right in the middle of the garage. I'm opening doors. Stuff is flying everywhere.
I've always been like that. I just can't work like that, and that's just the way it is. It's not that.
Yeah, I agree. Sometimes when you're in the middle of a huge project, it just gets so daunting with old parts, new parts, things in transit, tools, chemicals. There's all that stuff floating around. It's like, wait a minute.
Exactly.
Reset the clock. Hold on.
Yeah. Nice clean workbench. Everything starts out orderly again. Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah. No, I'm taking like the project that I didn't finish last week and I'm pushing it closer to the wall to make room for the new project that you have to see the tool bench down here, which is literally 10 feet away from me. It's got about a half a dozen projects on there and they're all pushed over the wall.
Well, you know what I tell myself all the time? Wow. If I tell you Charles Emerson Winchester, do you know who Charles Emerson Winchester is?
Yeah, MASH.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, Charles Emerson Winchester used to say something on MASH, and I actually live by this.
Oh, I think I know what it is, but go ahead.
Go right ahead.
What is it?
He used to say, they used to try to rush him into this meatball surgery, and he used to say, I do one thing at a time, I do it very well, and then I go on to the next thing. And that's kind of what I try to do. You know, and for me it works. I guess you have to have that personality, you know?
Yes, it's true. It's true. But and unfortunately, I wish life would cater to that sort of responsibility. I wish it would, because you could be in the middle of some project that you're really working on. Like, this has been my whole career in television. You put together a graphic package that looks fantastic, and then you hand it to people that evaluate it and are going to put it on the air, and then they go, no, you have to change this, but you have to do it in 5 minutes. And then you take the package back, and you have to slap everything together, pow, 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 and you just throw it at them, this meatball surgery that you throw at them and go, here, take it, air it. And that's what ends up happening. And it happens a lot of times in cars, too, where it's like the wife needs the car in 20 minutes. Get it in the car. Fix it really fast. Put a little electrical tape around that hose. Send it back out.
When I was restoring my car to drive, exactly what you said happened, Chris. I ended up sometimes with 3 or 4 sub projects going on, and I might have been waiting for a part or something. You know, I had to wait for an idea or, you know, whatever it was. So you start something else because there's always 1,000 projects. And then you realize, like, oh my God, I have 4 or 5 things open at, you know, active at one time, you know, pushed to different parts of the workbench, and like, oh, this is getting crazy. And sometimes there's nothing you can do to expedite it because you're waiting on other people. So imagine what the restoration shops are going through, where they have limited space, and, you know, not all shops are organized, dare I say, you know.
Really? What a surprise.
Yeah.
No, but this is like, this is a question that, yeah, Steve, this is what I would ask you. Like, with a person with such perfection, or at least strive for such perfection to do that one thing, do it right, and move on, how do you handle multiple projects like that? Do you, like, segment your tool bench to in different sections, different cells?
Will you think I'm crazy?
Yes.
The answer to your question is basically yes. I will take, you know, all of the, you know, I have one really, really big workbench, and then I have a couple of smaller ones, and I really try to keep things orderly. So if I can't finish one and I'm going to start another one, I will take it, you know, and I'll wipe everything down and I'll move it to another bench.
Wow.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things Ray just said, you know, he was talking about restoration shops. I find, because you guys know, I do a lot of this court work without what I call restorations gone bad. Yes. And I tell people, when people start asking me when they're going to first get into a restoration, I said, you got to be willing. I'm not talking about a paint job. You know, a lot of people call a paint job an interior restoration. But if you're having a full restoration done, you really have to, you have to have confidence in the shop that you're working with, because they are going to take every single piece, put it in a plastic bag, label it, photograph it so they know how it goes back together. And that takes time. That's very different than just throwing it on the workbench and then when it's time to put it back together, knowing, I wonder where this went. And you have to be willing to pay for that. And, you know, there's a reason that the good shops do that, because, you know, in the end, it probably gets done quicker and less expensive than having to bring the car back because they left a bolt out of a starter because they go, whatever it happens to be, you know?
Yep.
So it's... No. Mm-hmm. It's not easy.
No, you're absolutely right.
All right, well, fellas, we're going to run. We have beaten the clock again. The hour is burned. We've done it again. Steve, I thank you for coming back with us for more
pleasure. Fun.
Yeah, where can we catch you, Steve? What's the latest Steve Linton project?
Quite honestly, nothing.
All right.
Business as usual. Let's put it that way.
All right, guys. Perfect. We've got Kim in the background. We'll be back next week for Motormouth Radio. Thank you, Steve. For Chris Witzer, Chris, what do we always say?
Don't follow us home.
All righty. And I'm going to, we'll be back next week. See ya. We'll be right back.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Lynbrook and Oceanside. We remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose the shop where you have your car fixed. CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, including 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with rental car arrangements if needed. We're considered an essential business and are still open, providing touchless drop-off and pickup services. And yes, se habla español. More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or online at celebritychasecollision.com.